webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 7th of April 2016, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, where with Friedrich Nietzsche, we say a casual stroll through the lunatic asylum shows that faith does not prove anything. And here from Houston, Texas, is a great unteacher, the heretic's hope, the preacher's paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike. How are you?
Good evening, Barris. I'm doing fine. How about you, my friend?
I'm doing well, mate. Have you gotten over that cold that you had last weekend?
I am much, much better. Thank you.
Family, if you're wondering what's happening, it's because I will be moving with my wife to Cullman, Alabama, and that's the plan right now. And because it's going to make some disruption, we're recording two shows on one day here. So when I asked Mike how his cold is going, it was only 10 minutes ago that it was last week. Michael, what's happened since last week?
I can't tell you. It seems as though it's only been 10 minutes, Barris. I just don't know how this week flew by so quickly. But Moses evidently is still just being derelict in his duties, because in the whole week, I still don't have communication from him.
So. Yeah, that derelict. We're going to have to, I don't know, dock his pay or something. Hey, Mike, this week we're going to talk with one of your friends. Tell us about him.
That would be Grant Miller.
Well, we've interviewed him before, and it was fun. Mm-hmm. I think, is this a gentleman that was part of the German Brethren?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
And Grant, those that were here, I know the ones that were here for the summit about 4 years ago are going to be really glad to hear from Grant, because he came down for that. And most of the folks will remember us following with him in the fact that soon after he left here, he was on a motorcycle mm-hmm. ride. And a elderly lady ran a stop sign or something of that sort. And he was hit on his while riding his motorcycle. His leg kind of got stuck in the grill of the car. And after a short period of time, they finally made the decision that amputation was going to be the only way that they can handle this. So it was pretty remarkable. Grant found it remarkable at his emotional and mental response to all of this, to the accident, to losing his leg and the amputation. And it's as though mentally and emotionally he didn't skip a beat. So I think a lot of people were thinking that, you know, this is delayed grief process, you know. Well, if it was, it's 4 years later, and it's still delayed, because the man just embraced this, and he really credits the gospel for that mentality that helped him get through this, and I don't doubt it at all. He and I have talked quite a bit during his visit that he's had here with me. Down from Indiana, but we've been talking a great deal about how the gospel doesn't change things for you. The gospel changes how you deal with things.
The gospel doesn't change things for you. The gospel changes you for things.
Yes.
And it, mate, with this new website, I am having an absolute blast. I am listening to all of our old powercasts from day one, and I'm in about, oh gosh, somewhere in the first 10, because I listen to several a day now. It's just a lot of fun because I play them on a speed up kind of a thing, and I get to hear all the stuff that we did once. And one of the early ones was a whole powercast of Richard Mull. And in that powercast, he is talking about, and I think even two, I'm not sure, I'll have to recheck that, Grant Miller, about this very thing.
Wow.
And I was just, when you said we're interviewing Grant Miller today, I thought, oh, wow, I just heard him a couple of days ago from 4 years back. I am really excited to hear what he has to say today, mate.
Yeah, and you know, he and Richard Mull, they were both going through really life-changing and life-ending events, and they both were just remarkable. And this was with them fully embracing the moment and embracing people around them, We've talked often about the grief process and the denial, and you know, there's the what is it, 5 stages of grief, and it just seems like that once the gospel is settled in the heart, I don't think that it is that you skip the grief process. It may be, I just don't know, but the impact number one is minimized in life events. Number two, it is shortened, at least. Now, those are the two things I can say definitively. There are some say that it just eliminates the grief process altogether. But in following through, I know in my own personal life, things that would have just devastated me before, without me working on it, without me trying to change or observing the fact even that I needed change in my life. My ability, let me say, my way of handling things is completely different. I assert once again that human beings do not change. The thing that the gospel does is it doesn't change us. It gives us different tools to navigate who we are and how we relate to people.
Now you're sounding like Dr. House. Dr. House says people don't change.
Oh, yeah, I agree with Dr. House. People don't change. But that doesn't leave us without the wonderful possibilities of change. But the changes are not us changing. Because, see, if we change, then we'd have to learn a whole new point in which to relate to life. But because we don't change, we get to keep all of our stuff, good, bad, and indifferent.
Our quirks?
Yes, everything stays the same.
That's a shame. I was hoping that you'd become different over time.
Well, you and I both, but I have been sorely disappointed.
Yeah, I probably need it more than you. You're right.
So I gave up on hope, and I think a lot of people have heard that I redefined hope. Now, I don't care if somebody thinks, who are you to redefine hope?
How did you define hope, and how do you now, and what's the difference?
This is the way that it comes across, that hope means that there is an increased expectation of things turning out well or in your favor. I have hope. You know, a person is sick, the prognosis is not good, but we still are holding out hope.
We hope they'll come through.
Yes, and that this prognosis will not happen. You know, all the way from what's happening with your children to your finances, you hold out hope. Now, I found that definition of hope, regardless of what anybody wants to say about it, I found that definition of hope to be devastating, because every time that things did not turn out as I had, quote, hoped.
Which would be, what, 50-50?
Well, yeah, there's at least a 50-50 chance, and sometimes way less, sometimes way more. But the fact of it is, it was going to turn out one way or the other. But when things did turn out badly instead of where I had placed my, quote, hopes, I had a terrible emotional difficulty, mental and emotional difficulty with that, of just being the disappointment and all of those things was just horrendous. So I knew there was something wrong with that in light of the gospel. I didn't know what it was. So now, for me, and I say for me, I'm not saying that this is a gospel truth for anybody, but it is a truth for me. I changed the definition of hope from we're still waiting, thinking that things are going to turn out in our favor in some way, to regardless of, this is my definition of hope, regardless of what happens, I'm going to be okay. And Barris, that has brought a great deal of consolation to my heart. And I, you know, I still get thrilled if things turn out wonderful, just as much as I would have before. But there's not the devastation and the mental and emotional consequences of holding out hope as we once did. So that's the things. Things like that are the things that change. It's how you deal with life. It doesn't change life. It doesn't change whether things would have turned out one way or the other. But it does change the person's tools that they have on their side to be able to deal with these things in a completely different way. And surprising it is. Oh my gosh. I think the most consistent thing in the Gospel Revolution, you may ask Grant about some of these things too. He had things to say about it. Is that very thing. It's that I don't deal with me. I don't deal with others. I don't deal with situations the way I used to. And that really does seem to be the most consistent impact of the gospel in people's lives that I have experienced for myself and in hearing their stories. So, Barris, with all that being said, I think it's a good time for us to get Grant Miller in the studio here in Houston, Texas. And folks, those of you that are listening, many, many of you already know Grant. He needs no introduction. But for those of you that have not had the joy, you're going to hear a story. His story of coming out of the religion he was in, his story of going through this change in the way he thinks and the way he deals with things really is quite amazing. So I hope you enjoy my friend Grant Miller.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Give me another count.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Oh, shoot. What state are you from?
Indiana.
You just wanted to prove that people in Indiana can bloody count backwards, and all us poor suckers. And I mean, we can only get to 3 forwards, and you can go backwards.
Oh, you're such a goof. Yeah.
Hey, mate. It is so good to recording. It is so good to see your face again, mate. How long's
it's
it been?
To be on.
Four years or so. How long's it? No, a couple of years since we talked.
Let's see. Yeah, I was right here in Houston at Mike's other place probably 2 years ago. Yeah, I believe it was.
What you been doing in the meantime? You been entering any three-legged races or anything like that?
No, it's a Hopsalot race.
What's it? Yeah, okay. I've met my match. What's a Hopsalot?
No, I'm just making it up.
Oh, that's okay, because there's a lot of people in your situation, and we probably need to have a new national sport.
Yes, we should. But it's for people that work at IHOP.
Is this? Oh, is this ever going to go to air?
Barris, no, I've bought a couple properties in Manchester to rent out, and so that made quite a bit of work just fixing up the houses. And but then that's kind of in my off time because we have the swimming pool service business, and that's just a small business. That's just me, and then once my daughter Lana and our youngest son Thad is out of school, they help me in the summertime. So that gets really busy.
Now, I think we owe it to our listeners to give them a bit of backdrop here. Michael mentioned some of it.
For those that haven't heard the story, I guess, just briefly, just tooling through my hometown, North Manchester, on my motorcycle, and a car comes up from my right side, and just simply, I don't think they even hardly stop. I come around a corner, actually, and so they're a bit hidden. And as soon as I see them, instead of them holding at a stop sign, she is coming right out across the road. I see that grill coming right at my right side, and my last thought was, this isn't going to be good. And
your last thought before what?
Before the impact. The next thing I knew, I had been thrown across two lanes of traffic going the other way, landing with my back on a curb. My head was out in the turn lane, and I thought, this isn't a good place to be, so I kind of scooched myself up in the grass, and once I knew I was out of traffic's way, I just kind of gave up, you might say. I soon heard...
You passed out?
I don't think so, because I soon heard sirens, and there was very soon people around me doing things. I never even looked down at my body. I had no idea that my arm was about ripped off and my leg was smashed. My foot was actually laying up here by my waist or my ribs somewhere, and I didn't know it. The EMTs told me that later. But anyway, a month in the hospital and, 10 or 11 surgeries, 15 blood transfusions. I was back out, and they actually could have kept my leg, my foot, but... the complications was expected to be great. I would probably endure pain the rest of my life and would get along actually much better just with a prosthesis. So that's the route I chose. It was a no-brainer. And after all, Barris, I had, 70 pools to open in 7 or 8 months.
Months later, yeah. You've only just gone into winter when this happened then. I mean, maybe not even winter.
Right, it was fall. It lasted August. Well, the doctor said he'd have me back walking in 6 months, and it was just to the week, 6 months.
Wow.
So it all worked out very well. It was a much longer journey than I pictured in my mind. I literally just thought, I would heal up, and you go to the prosthetist, and he would fit you to a foot, and away you would go. Well, there's a lot of time waiting on things to heal before you can comfortably put your full weight on it, and then learning to walk with it. And so there was a lot more to it than I expected. But within a couple years, you're just walking very naturally with it, and here it is 4.5 years, and I find there's even times I'm walking out across the ground and I realize I've walked quite a stretch and I didn't even think about my foot. It has taken that long to get there, though. It is surprising how, even still today, when I walk, I am very conscious of where I'm putting my foot and what angle of surface my foot's going to land on, because this ankle doesn't roll, So, climbing ladders and getting down, squatting down to work on a pool pump, those are a couple things that are, just not handy, that's all. But you just do them. Very doable.
Now, people who'd like to hear a little bit more about your background can tune in to, they can go to www.gospelrevolution.com, and in the search bar they can write Grant Miller, and they will hear an earlier podcast where you and I talked a lot about your background in the German Brethren. Let's just remind folks again, just in one sentence, what are the German Brethren?
Old German Baptist Brethren is the full name. They're just a group of people scattered across the nation. There's about 6,000 or 7,000 of them total. Plain group. The men wear a broad brim black hat with broad fall pants. Women wear a certain cut of dress with a covering. They observe the Holy Kiss. Men greeting men with a kiss. Women likewise. Women, and they wash feet. They are allowed to have automobiles, electricity, telephones, but no television, radios, tape players, those kinds of things.
So they're like, in fact, they are a version of the Mennonite Brethren, that came out of Middle Europe.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of similarities. Mennonites, of course, followers of Menno Simons, and the German Baptist followers of Alexander Mack. So there's some differences between the views of the Brethren and the Mennonites, but some of it's just simple things like Mennonites would be more likely to sprinkle, Brethren are more likely to be to dunk, full immersion, calling them dunkards.
So if we took the Amish and the Mennonites and the German Brethren, these all came out of Middle Europe and were a group quite distinct from the Reformation, quite distinct from the Protestant movement. They were there before the Protestant movement and were horribly persecuted by the official church at the time. That was the Church of Rome, the Roman Catholic Church. And yet they maintained and stuck to their principles and beliefs. And from that group stems this broad group of dissenters from the Roman Catholic Church, but not Protestants.
Yes, and see, years later, the Brethren is not that old of a group compared to the Amish or the Mennonites. The Alexander Mack, that's just like 200 and, I don't know, 25 years old or something like that. It's a much younger group. It began in Germany, thus the name, the word German. I don't disrespect the people themselves. They're as valuable as anybody. You know, we're all one. We're all one being, one spirit. I believe that fully. But the beliefs that are taught are just, not only are they useless, they are actually very harmful. But that's true of any religion. One thing that makes the German Baptist, that kind of defines them is, in Alexander Mack's mind, if the Bible says wash feet, you wash feet. If it says women are to wear a covering, you wear a covering. If it says greet one another with a holy kiss, they believe. So in other words,
And for left-handed people who masturbate, how many of them have still got their left hands?
Well, they all do, far as I know.
Oh, okay. So they don't really take the Bible literally?
Well, no, they do. They just don't masturbate.
Oh, yes. Yes. I heard. Now, I might be wrong here.
There's another way.
Yeah, there's another way. Yeah, 95% here's the survey that I heard from the U.S. Department of Health, that 95% of men masturbate and the other 5% lie.
Uh-huh. Well, that makes sense.
So, oh, dear. Did I have to go here? Yeah, I think I did because it's nothing. Let's face it. Do they all have both eyes? I mean, you should pluck an eye out if it offends you.
Well, see, that's just where it gets you. You just end up, if you was to ask them these questions, they would say, well, they think God is reasonable.
Just not with long hair for women.
Right, that's right. See,
okay.
Wherever we want to draw the line, of course.
Wherever we draw the line, that's where the line is. And line God is. Respects our beliefs.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a good reason for everything they feel they don't need to do, there's a reason for everything they do. They should be doing what they do. So it's hard to get them in a corner. It's like anything else.
So when did you leave the German Brethren and why?
That was in 95. The reason why was just, oh my, there's so many, you know, I'd read certain verses like, it's been so long, I about forget. I think it's Romans 5, first verse, being justified by faith. And just verses like that, that was like, now, wait a minute. We were taught that, well, we never used the word justified. We weren't even taught what that word meant. But we believed that if you were baptized and obeyed the commands in the Bible, that you had every reason to hope that you would go to heaven when you die. One thing I want to say is, people that go to the local whatever church they go to, you might be a carpenter, and you go to so-and-so church. You say, we attend so-and-so church. With us, we are German Baptists. That was, I say we are. That's the way we did think. That's the way, you're not really taught that way to think. It's just the way it is. That's your very identity. You're not a carpenter who goes to the German Baptist Church. You are a German Baptist. Being a German Baptist is their full identity, even before being an American. for one thing, they don't vote. They don't go to war. They wouldn't say the Pledge of Allegiance because that would be to dishonor God. The religion, that's a false identity. It's something you stuck your head into to give you an identity, to give you assurance.
But hang on, you didn't stick your head into it. You were born into it.
I was born into it, right. But still, I can't blame anyone but myself for accepting it.
I just had this conversation with Bola Moyes, and he said, belief is something that you put yourself into. And I said to him, and boy, Bola is a great friend of the GR. He has moved into and probably moved on from the GR. But I said to him, your own children, you teach them your cultural and philosophical beliefs. They pick them up from you. They copy you. They are you until they are of an age to think for themselves. So you didn't actually put yourself into this, did you? Or did you?
Well, you raise a good argument. I mean, and when you first come out of something like that, you begin to blame them, and because you feel tricked, you feel lied to.
I know I did.
And then after a while, I became like, you know what? I guess I bought it. I believed it. I went along with it. I wasn't intelligent enough, wise enough, early enough in my life to call it what it was and walk away.
You know, the Jesuits, that is the philosophical, highly educated arm of the Catholic Church, they have this saying, give us a child until they are seven, and we will show you the man.
Yes.
Are they wrong?
No, I think they're right.
So at what point do you become responsible for what you think? Because what I'm hearing you say is, I bought into it at some point, and yes, you did, and so did I, and so did all of us, but at what point do you become responsible for thinking for yourself?
I don't know the answer to that, Barris. It's like a mixture of what you were given and yet somehow finding the courage to do your own thinking. And I know my dad at a young age, and I don't agree with near everything he would believe now, but at a young age, whether it was the feed salesman or the insurance salesman or the guy that wanted to repair our tractor or whatever it was on the farm, he told us, boys, you got to do your own thinking.
Was he born into the German brand?
Absolutely, yeah.
So when he said this, did he think that that applied to everything or just a feed
salesman? Just a feed salesman.
Because he might rip you off.
Exactly, right. Okay. But no, he never intended for us to take it to things like the church.
So without actually thinking about it, he taught you the truth.
Yes, I believe so. In fact, I have told him since that when I look back and put a mental picture to him teaching us, I see us standing in our shop where we did all of our tractor repairs, looking with the big doors open, looking westward, and him pointing toward the evening sunset and saying, boys, because I just had three brothers, there's four boys. He said, boys, I don't know exactly what the truth is, but it's out there somewhere. Because even though he was still a member in the German Baptist Church and was not even thinking of leaving, it's like somewhere down in his soul, I was sensing some dissatisfaction.
Has he left?
He has now, yes.
Your father had within him the seeds of truth.
Yes.
And was honest to it.
Yes, I believe that, yep.
You have lived life some since we spoke last, and you've certainly lived life some since the first time I heard about you. The gospel revolution seems to have the most impact on people who are trapped in religion. I don't really care what religion it is. And I suppose if I had to say, what is our cause? What is our purpose for being? I would say it's for standing in the gap between people who are trapped in religion. And by religion, what I'm saying is that which would have you act in a given way, regardless of whether or not it's true. Mm-hmm. Our position seems to be to stand in the gap between religion and freedom. And for freedom, I would define that as, yes, you can do. The one thing that Luther said, and I love it, is sin and sin boldly, because grace is always greater. Now, freedom for me is, you have no more strictures, no more ropes holding you to believing anything. Go out and explore your heart and explore what makes sense to you. Like your dad said, pointing at the sunset, the truth is out there. I'm just not certain that I know what it is. Go find it.
Yes.
Now, the only thing he left out was go find it. But I'm pretty sure from what you've told me that he actually meant to say go find it.
Yeah.
So that's where we find ourselves in the Gospel Revolution app. Tell me this. Over the time that we have known each other, how has your life changed in ways that you would encourage other people, or in ways that you would say to other people, this is well worth looking at. Just look at it. If you find it, that's good. And if you don't, that's good.
Interesting question. Explore the idea of God doesn't cause things in your life or withhold things from happening in your life. He wants you to be happy, enjoy life, discover your own path, explore. I fully believe that. And the reason that is so important to me is, just like when this accident happened, I never even thought in terms of why did this happen to me? Why did God allow this? Or what did I do? That set me free. I felt no fear of being guilty.
Now, you found the gospel before this, correct?
Yes, yes.
And are you attributing the fact that you never thought, oh, geez, did I upset God, and is that why this happened? How would you have looked at it in your German Brethren days?
We wouldn't have thought of it in terms of what's God trying to teach me, or why did God cause this or allow this. I think we would have considered more from a satanic side. We would have given Satan the power somehow to have intervened, you know, where maybe I've been disagreeable with my wife, I've been whatever. We looked in our life where we were out of bounds somehow, somewhere, allowing Satan to have an inroad. Maybe the wife isn't wearing her covering as loyal as she should. We haven't been praying. You know what, wife? We've been this or that. We've been getting too busy, too involved with our work, and we've not been taking time to pray before every meal, pray by the bedside, or, you know, and that allows Satan an inroad. That's probably the way we would have thought of it.
Were you married in there?
Yes. The other thing is that's important, I think, for people to learn is to be bold and willing to be the observer, observe your feelings, observe your reactions to things and people and the way people make you feel. Be willing to observe your feelings in situations, call them what they are, don't pussyfoot around and call them something else, and give yourself room and justify why you feel the way you do, but just, you can just call it what it is. No guilt, no shame, no endeavor to try to change yourself or improve. Number one, you can't. Number two, you shouldn't. Because then when you try to change it, you are just simply acting. You are just becoming an actor. The third one is the solution, which in my book I just referred to as notice and nod. That's all.
Okay, hold tight. Hold up right there. I looked for your book and I couldn't find it. Is it available somewhere?
I think it still is. Yes,
Tell us the name of it.
It is called Think and Be Free.
Where is it available?
If you do a search at Amazon, it's been a few weeks ago I did a search and I still found it. It was further up the line a ways and it took less keywords to find it. Now, if you enter Think and Be Free, maybe even enter Grant Miller or Grant Emerson Miller, it should come up.
Okay, I just put into Amazon Think and Be Free and I'm getting Dale Carnegie, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. Oh, no, two down. Well, how come his is... Okay, Think and Be Free by Irvine J. Patrick B. That's not you.
That's not me.
I'm looking for you, mate. I want our people... Okay. What was the name?
It's Think and Be Free by Grant Emerson Miller.
Typing in Grant Emerson Miller. out of frustration, confusion, and fear?
Yes, yes, yes. That's it.
Okay, family. Now, this is a book that Michael Williams really recommends that you look at, and it's Think and Be Free, Out of Frustration, Confusion, and Fear into Understanding, Clarity, and Confidence. It's 132 pages, and there's no customer reviews. Okay, guys, listen, let's assault Amazon here. Why don't every one of you who are Amazon, I'm an Amazon Prime user, I hope that you all are, because it really isn't a bad idea, but why don't all of you write to Amazon and say, why the hell, when we put the title in, doesn't this book come up? And then go buy the book. It's $12. Let me see. I'm going to guess that this is a print as it's needed book.
Yes, you're correct.
Which is why it doesn't come up.
Okay, yes, that's possibly. And it has faded a bit in popularity. I'll just say it has.
You can't find it by its title. How could it not fade in popularity? Family, I think that we have a project here. All of you guys who hold the Gospel Revolution dear in your hearts and who are listening to Grant Miller today, Grant Emerson Miller, may I say, today, and go and buy the book. I'm going to buy it right now. In fact, what the heck? Let's do it while I'm online. Add to cart. Add to cart. Proceed to checkout. No, I never did forget my password. There you go. Place your order.
I wish there were some reviews on there.
Family, that's why you need to start buying this book and put reviews there. I'm going to put a review there as soon as I've read the book, and I'm going to share this item on my Facebook, post to Facebook. Now it goes on my Facebook. Our goal here at the Gospel Revolution is to get the gospel out. Here is a man that Mike Williams has recommended to me and has recommended to you. And here is a guy I am recommending to you, and if you want to have more information about him, go back and listen to our previous podcast. Go buy his book. This guy does not need your money, but this philosophy does need your mind. Go and buy the book. How hard can it be? $12.95. Think and Be Free by Grant Emerson Miller. Now, I'm glad that we had this conversation about this, mate, because last time I went looking for the book and thought, I won't say that the book's out of print or whatever. I didn't realize that it was still there. So, mate, do you remember where you were before I so rudely interrupted you?
No, that's totally fine. I think I was just getting ready to comment that the notice and nod, just when you observe feelings that you wish you did not have to experience. And I say it that way because we feel certain things in reaction to events or people, things people said, and we do not enjoy those feelings. We don't enjoy that anger or that fear or frustration, and we'd like to be free of it, but we tend to either ignore it, push it aside, and say, oh, well, everybody is that way, or we feel guilt or shame. We feel immature, and really, none of that's necessary. We just face it. Notice it, nod. You might say nod your head. You call it what it is. You just say, yep, that's what that is. That's why I so-and-so. I'll never forget the day that I asked a friend a question about an idea about something. I don't remember what it was. Doesn't matter. And a couple days later, we was talking again, and I asked him what he come up with. He said, well, You probably have something better on it than this, but here's what I came up with. And in that moment, I knew I had the option to say in response, yes, that's all I came up with also, so that I at least looked as intelligent as he. But I didn't. I said, no, I actually didn't come up with anything. And to see this, the reason this stands out, the reason I can repeat this to you is because it was a turning point. I'm not telling you this because that's the way I always think. No, I'm telling this because it was an event. It was a turning point in my life. I knew this was something new. I knew this was a new way to be authentic and real. And I could have claimed a trophy, you might say, by saying, oh, I already had that thought too. But no, I just stuck with the truth. And that was, I didn't even think of that. You're ahead of me. I had nothing, my friend. And so the authenticity, being real and genuine, is more sweet than looking clever and intelligent.
I get into discussions where sometimes it's almost all but imperative for me to prove I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
Sweetness is not a byproduct of that.
Right.
It is always bitterness.
Yes.
Or something akin to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree. And I've got that personality. Well, maybe everyone does, but no, I know I do. That if somebody quotes part of something, you feel a need to quote the rest of it, finish it to show that you also know what he's speaking of. No, you can just be quiet and let it go. Now, there's no purpose in forcing yourself to be quiet unless it's just the fact you don't want to offend him. But as far as you personally, there's no reason to try to change yourself and improve yourself. But you just observe it, call it what it is, and let the gospel, let truth change you from the inside. And then later, you find yourself making changes that you didn't even try to bring about. They just come from within.
Explain that.
I don't know what else it is besides a renewed mind. A change of the way you see others and the way you see yourself. You no longer, you see yourself valuable and yet not preeminent. You see yourself one with all people. We are one spirit. And so the need to trump them melts away. The need to conquer, to prove yourself. It's an inner confidence.
So, Grant, if I'm in a place where I want this result, how do I make it happen?
If you want it, that's really all you need right there is the desire. And then the next thing I can think of is courage. Just courage to be willing to observe your feelings. Begin to notice them. And here's what it's like. We so often end up, and the whole event is over. The argument with the person, the fear of...
Hang on. The whole event. I love it. The whole event. Oh, you have described me so much more than you ever expected to. You have described me so much better than you ever thought you might.
Good, good. The whole event is over, and the next thing you know, you're holding broken pieces, and they are not pleasant. They are like shards of glass that are poking you all over, and you don't even know how you got where you are. It's like, here I am again. I didn't want this to happen again, and yet it has. And I am angry and frustrated, and I feel like a fool. So here's what it's like to me. You know how a new song comes out on the radio, and you'd never know how it starts, but you just love the chorus. And every time you hear the chorus, you're like, oh, yes, here's my song again. That's the chorus. Yep. Well, anyway, but the brain has the ability to remember a few notes or a few lines before the part you recognize. So each time you hear it, you recall more of the song earlier before the part you recognize. You rewind. So you begin to recognize it earlier and earlier until as soon as it comes on, you know the first three notes. You think, here's my song. But it took you a bit to recognize the first part of it. Back to the event, whatever it is we want to call it. You began to observe your feelings, and little by little, if you just take time right there and rewind and you just kind of think about, don't feel bad about whatever you see. Don't judge yourself. Don't nothing. Just observe it and call it what it is. And little by little, you'll begin to notice and be aware of your feelings as you're coming into it. And so you can almost kind of set the stage as you would like to rather than as you do so by default.
So you come out of a restrictive religious background, come into the gospel, have this horrific motorcycle accident, and you're describing what happened to you? Is that right?
I began to grow in it before the accident, but, you know, we're never done learning and growing. Some of these very same things that we're talking about is what changed the way I viewed the accident itself. All of this together, all of this learning to be introspective and to observe one's feelings and call them what they are, be honest. It doesn't make it so you no longer do these things or think this way. It's just that you're aware of it when you do, and you're not offended. You're not, you don't feel guilt or shame. You're just willing to call it what it is, and it's okay. Now, how you get there, I think, is the confidence that comes with the gospel, knowing that, you know, we were buried with Christ. We rose with him. We are one with God. We are of his divinity. It's our very identity. So really embracing that. I don't mean just thinking and agreeing with it, but where it actually affects the way you think about yourself. There's no reason to feel any guilt. There's no reason to be afraid that someone's gonna discover who you truly are. That gives you freedom to just be honest and say, you know what? What I just said was thoughtless of me. I'm sorry. Because you begin to value other people's feelings more than their image of you.
You said when I write to people. Do you write to many people?
No. I just mean an email here or there or texting, basically. I used to write articles about every couple, three, well, about one a week, something like that. But it seemed like I trailed off. I'm a writer. When I have thoughts, I write them down. I've got loads of writings, but...
How would you like to help edit a new book?
Edit a new book? I would edit a book. Yes.
Randy French, did you hear that?
No, I did not.
That's okay. Randy French did.
Yeah.
You're the perfect person to answer this question for me. I have sometimes thought the people who come through the gospel have phantom pains. We were raised under a pew, people like you and I. We felt guilty about stuff. The guilt was cut off us.
Mm.
And yet, sometimes we still have a phantom pain of guilt.
Yes, I know where you're going. I think if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that if I don't feel guilty, I'm not honoring what I was given. I'm not honoring God.
Mm.
I need to pay a price. I can't just have things free and easy.
Mm.
There is a price I must pay. Yeah, something like that maybe. As opposed to just, no. Jesus said, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Free. You know, it is all free or it's not at all. With Christ, sacrifice on the cross and resurrection, there's no payment that need be made. In fact, a payment would just show a lack of faith. And that's not to say someone saying thanks for what you did for us is out of the way, but not in any way a payment.
How would you describe faith?
Resting.
And yet, when I heard you just say faith, I heard working. Am I missing something?
Okay.
Because if I am, it happens fairly regularly now, and I'm starting to wonder if the nursing home might be the best thing for me.
Because I don't think faith is nothing you have to do. It's more just simply a ceasing from anything at all, and yet in order to rest, it's like our mind needs a belief pattern on which to rest. You have to give it the definition or explanation so it has reason to rest.
So I should give faith a shape that I can recognize that would allow me to rest.
You know, maybe not at all, because I have a couple children that they don't really know what they believe, because the German Baptist religion has so splintered my family, not my kids, but my siblings and my parents were so shattered. And it had their cousins moving away when they were young, and their grandparents moving away, I mean, physically, geographically moving away, because of the whole church problems, that it has just caused, they want nothing to do with it at all. It's just burnt them out. They were going through pain and loss at a young age, and over what? Just difference in beliefs in religion. And so they want nothing to do with it. They don't even really know what they believe. Are they resting? Absolutely, because they are trying to live up to nothing. They are free from any need to live a certain way, think a certain way, and so they are resting. They don't have an active or a positive faith in someone or something, but there is total resting and freedom.
If you could say anything to anybody listening to this podcast for the first time, and they could come from anywhere, they could come from atheism, they could come from religion, they could come from a good Baptist home, they could come from Methodism, they could come from Brethrenism, they could come from German Baptistism, what would you say to them?
That's a tough one, Barris, because it seems like people need to not be afraid to go within. Boy, there's been people conquer mountains, climb in the highest mountains. There's been people swim to great depths in the ocean. There's been people face enemies and animals. It takes courage to do those things, but so few conquer the challenging terrain right within their own heart and mind. Because as far as making sure that the atheist comes to believe the gospel, I think it would answer a lot of his questions. But he is encircled in the word all. And so whether he believes it or not, the gospel applies to him. God has him in the hollow of his hand through the sacrifice and resurrection of Christ. And so that's taken care of. He just needs to discover freedom from himself. That's really all the problem is. Is just our own fears and concerns, our own inhibitions, and oh my, trying to keep our head above water. And in this case, in a mental sense, water is the stifling or drowning effect of trying to keep up with what we think others are. It's a phantom. Everyone's feeling this. But everyone thinks everyone else is ahead of them, above them, better than them, and I'm the only one that doesn't get it. I'm the only one that's behind. I'm the only one that deals with these feelings of anger and frustration and fear, afraid that I'm going to be discovered for who I really am, and so I've got to put on a good front to impress people. Just being willing to face all that to find freedom, not for the sake of improving. One needs no improvement for anyone else, just for your own freedom. Each person can say this: I am God. I am one with Him. Jesus prayed. Did He not pray that we would all be one with God as He is one with God? And I feel like that was fulfilled, where Jesus didn't pray that futilely. We are one being, and that's something I tell my, I don't make a point to tell myself every day, but at some time throughout the day, it pops in my head that I am God, I am divine, I'm one with Him, I'm one with everyone, and that changes the way I see people, it changes the way I treat people, because we are just all one being, we're one heart. Just expressed in 7 billion ways. I like what Wade Brewer said once. He said that humanity was only under two men. We had first man, second man, first Adam, last Adam. So if you take those two phrases together, and both those phrases, of course, are quotes. If you've got a first and a last, and those same two are a first and a second, that means there was never a man between Adam and Christ, and it means there will never be another man after Christ. You have a first and a last, and you have a first and a second. All humanity was under Adam until Christ, and then all humanity is under Christ. And you know who you are based on your head. If your leader or your head is Adam, then you are as Adam was. You are under a curse of sin and death. If your head and leader is Christ, then you're as he was or is. You are under a law of life and righteousness. Just as they couldn't do any, they even if they did the most righteous looking act, it was still sin. Now, even though you do the most horrendous act or think the most horrendous thought or even live the most lewd and licentious and lustful life.
Dang, I'm included.
that finally, see, if I get enough of them words said, it finally gets to slip me in. It doesn't matter. Everything is righteousness and life. And somebody might say, there's no way that those deeds are license or they are righteousness. But God is a God of life and righteousness, not a God of sin and death. And so just as his including all without their choice overrides the law of sin and the curse of sin and death under Adam, everybody accepts that without their choice. But God is not a God of the dead, but he's a God of the living. So his action overrides and is greater, more powerful than that of Adam, thus requiring no choice, no reaction, no response. We're just in because he says so. All those things change the way one thinks about themselves, and therefore you can dare to enter that scary place of your own mind and why you think the way you do and just observe it. A little bit like inheriting your dad's place and you grew up on this farm, but there's that scary little shed out back that no one ever wanted to go. And now that you're older, maybe you lived in the city for 20 years and your parents pass away and you go back to the farm to clean up, to put the place on the market, and now for some reason you're not scared to go into that little shed. And that's the way this is. You're mature now because you understand who you are in Christ, because of what he did. You are one with God. You are divine. We are actually God. We are one with him. When you know that, you're not scared because you don't care what you see. You don't care how you appear to yourself.
How do you keep feeding yourself the gospel? And this is a trick question because I'm going to come back at it in a minute.
Okay. I don't know. That's a good question. It seems like, I'll just be honest, in my life, I just couldn't get enough. I consumed it. I thought of it all day long. I wrestled through decisions and truth, enlightenment, light bulb moments, whatever, learning what the truth was. And now it seems like it's just an anchor and an undergirding to my soul, but I don't visit it like I did.
Do you listen to the podcast?
No, I don't.
Why not? I mean, you've been on two of them.
Yes, I know. And I've listened to many of them, but not in the last while.
Because?
If I was hearing new things that really answer my questions, if they were things that answered the questions I have that trouble me, I would be.
Have you ever sent a question in?
That's the thing. See, I don't really have questions.
So how can we answer questions you don't have?
Exactly. Why don't I have questions? That's the good question. Because I feel like I'm content, Barris. I almost think that you that are involved in it, you have a greater role to play because you have a continual supply of people growing. But you have grown people up. I mean, it's just a little bit like being a baby food manufacturer. You aren't feeding the same people you were feeding 30 years ago, okay?
Welcome to the Gerber Revolution.
Gerber. Yeah, exactly. See?
But do we keep doing this all by ourselves? Or with people like your help?
No, I think it takes other people. That's been my experience anyway. I learned from everyone.
How do you feel about being part of the other people?
Well, I feel like I am a little here and there. I talk to people here and there, but to play a more active role, I would have to make myself. I would have to say, this is what I ought to do, and I don't want to do that. I want it to come from, I can't help myself. I just want to do this thing. I follow my heart, Barris. If I want to do a thing, I do, and if I don't, I don't.
I got that. So, I'm asking you, what will you do to help us?
Nothing, until you ask me.
I just did.
But I don't know what you want me to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You set people free from tithing, and then you set people free from even devoting a certain amount of their life to religious or spiritual things at all. You don't have to go to church on Sunday. You give them freedom to even totally throw themselves into family, vacation, business, whatever it is that their hobbies that trip their trigger. And they enjoy it. They are enjoying the freedom. Your mission successful. But I'll tell you one more thing that I'm working on in my mind. And I'm going to do what you said. Right now, all I can offer is whatever is already in my reservoir. But if I go away, because having in the back of my mind, more will build. I know I will think of things, possibly. This message, the gospel message, is so out there, so extreme from where people are at in church. The people who are really hurting, that really crave relief, are barely out of their church. They are just almost standing on the outside doors. And the gospel message is out there quite a ways. It's like they almost have to find a certain amount of freedom to even listen to this extreme message. And they're no longer hurting. I mean, yeah, there's still pain as manifested by tears in people's testimonies at Mike's, after he speaks, you know, at a little different area here or there. There's a lot of relief, but it's like I wish I could talk to those people who were where I was as they left the church when they're really hurting and scared. By the time they're even willing to listen to this, they've already found some amount of relief. I'm really torn because I totally understand the feeling that your people experience because I'm one of them. I didn't learn what I know much anywhere else besides from Mike's CDs. But I've gotten to a point where I don't see how it can get any better. I don't see how the message can keep going and that I can learn new things about who I am. Once you believe you are one with God and that all things are reconciled back to Him, I don't ever even talk about Satan or his demons or what Satan is doing or...
What if that is not the goal? What if getting more people want to be where you're at?
Right. I'm telling you, though, why being here, you tend to want to just move on. You tend to want to just turn your mind toward, you know what, now I'm free to buy some more properties and help people find homes and work with their personal situations.
What if our goal is to get more people to be free?
I don't know what to do, but what you're, I don't know of a better plan. I'm really all about bringing relief to people. I see myself as somebody running around on the battlefield with a jug of water and a cup, just bringing relief to people. Because there's a lot of hurt and a lot of fear out there. I don't have to have recognition. I don't have to have, I just love doing that.
Hey, mate, is there any last words you'd like to share with our people?
Hey, I really enjoyed this exchange with Barris, and I just hope, the thing I really hope out of all this is that something made sense to some listener, or, you know, that clarified, comforted, brought some hope, or explained some clarity. I guess that's the biggest thing to someone. That's all I can say. I hope it means something to someone and gives relief and takes away some fear, some effort, some guilt. That's what I feel.
Grant Emerson Miller, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity and the time, Barris. I've enjoyed it.
If anyone wants to connect with Grant, what email should we use?
Hey, I would love to hear from people. I do not take it as a bother, or I would love to, any response whatsoever, questions, or even if you disagree with something, just share it with me at TBF now. That is TBF as in think and be free, and the word now, N-O-W, at gmail.com.
And if you'd like Grant Miller to come speak at your city or town, just email him there.
And I'm telling you, Barris, I would be delighted to sit in a living room with five or six other people, and we just talk and exchange thoughts and ideas. So it doesn't need to be some great big group. I would love to be able to bring a cup of cold water.
Okay, mate. Thank you, Grant. Thank you so much. And is it going to take another 2 years before we get to see Maury?
I don't see any reason why it has to.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. But God's eternal plan was just to enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and order your copy of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few, one of the best study guides ever written to destroy forever any illusions that there is any degree of separation between God and man. If you want the quickest route between where you are now and being ravished by the oceans of grace, washing all traces of self-doubt away, this is it. So now it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston. Hope you guys enjoyed Grant. I am sure that you did. And we'll pick up on all of our emails. We do have a lot. So hang on. We're going to get into them in the coming weeks. So we love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you thought about the PowerCast. Give us any suggestions that you might have for us. We love you.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended, it don't mean you're right. How's the accent? Is that getting better? It don't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over.
Better.